That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations.
I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Men will still say, this was our finest hour.
Hello, and welcome to Speaking of History. You're listening to podcast number 41, and today's date is September 24th, 2006. My name is Eric Langhorst, and I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri. And this is the podcast that talks about history, technology, and education. And today I'm going to do a special recording. I just recently got back from the Microsoft Innovative Teacher Forum that was held out in Redmond, Washington at the headquarters of Microsoft. We were able to be on the campus of Microsoft for a couple of days last week on Thursday and Friday, and a very interesting conference. I'll have some more comments about it in a future podcast. But today I wanted to focus on the closing keynote, which was presented by Tom Carroll. And Tom Carroll is from the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future. I was actually able to meet Tom a little bit earlier this year when I was in Washington, D.C. for the Cables Leaders in Learning Awards, and he spoke a little bit at one of our working luncheons while we were out there in Washington. And Tom has a great message. He's talking about teacher attrition. He's talking about what it takes to be a teacher in today's society. It's a great 45 minutes. I encourage everybody to listen to what he has to say. And then I'd encourage you also to check out the links and go to the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future and find out a little bit more about the organization that Tom represents. So without any further ado, here is Tom Carroll at the Microsoft Innovative Teachers Forum on September 22nd, 2006 in Redmond, Washington.
I made a comment yesterday that when we started this and when we sat down to design the activities and what was going to go on within this forum, we wanted to stay away from as much stand and deliver as possible. We've all been through conferences and workshops of sitting lethargically and just listening to individuals. But over the last 2 years, I really feel that we needed to have our next speaker close this out, because his work and mission and sole focus right now is so important for you to hear, because you are leading the wave. And I'd like to introduce Tom Carroll from the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future, who is going to share with us over the next 45 minutes.
Thank you, Brian and Mary and Microsoft, Kathy, for the opportunity to be here and speak with you, and the opportunity we've had to work over the last couple of years on this initiative. And I especially want to thank all of you for the work you're doing out there, and for the exciting opportunity we've had to learn about your projects and get to know you here. I'm with the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future. We're based in Washington, D.C. We're an advocacy group for quality teaching. Our commission is chaired by former Secretary Riley, Richard Riley, and a group of national commissioners and state legislators and governors. We work in almost 27 states now, 27 state coalitions. And we're working to improve teacher preparation. We're working to improve the quality of teaching in the classroom, and we're working to improve the incentives and rewards that are available to you as high-performing teachers. Now, this conference, the theme of this meeting is challenges and opportunities. And I want to talk with you about some challenges and opportunities, some significant challenges and opportunities. And I want to talk with you about the important role that you have to play in a movement to change education. We need to launch and sustain a movement to change the way we teach in this country. And it's a big challenge, but you'll see why it's important in a minute. So we'll see if I've mastered this. Here's the first indicator of the challenge. We did some research over the last few years on teachers entering and leaving teaching. This is from the National Center on Education Statistics. It's data from 1987 up to 2000. Okay, it's over a decade of data. And it shows two interesting things. One is the dark line here is the number of teachers entering teaching. These are teachers entering the profession. You know, and it's basically a good news story, especially around here in the mid-90s. We had a big upturn in the number of teachers entering the profession. What happened there was people like Secretary Riley and other national leaders said, we need 2 million teachers in 10 years. And the nation responded. People like yourself responded. We have a lot of teachers who entered the workforce during that period of time in the room here. Schools of education cranked up the supply of teachers coming into the classroom. That's really a pretty dramatic story, and that's a good news story about your efforts and your commitment to teaching this next generation of students. Okay. So we got good news, but we got some bad news also. The bad news is this red line. This red line is the number of teachers who leave the profession. And you can see that even though we were able to accelerate in the number of teachers entering, the number of teachers around the early 90s, the late 80s, leaving, started to accelerate even faster. Until now we're at a point where teachers are leaving faster than we can recruit them. Now, it's 10 years later. In the mid-90s, we said we need 2 million teachers in 10 years. It's 10 years later, and people are still saying we need 2 million teachers in 10 years. And it's not because there's a teacher shortage. It's because the attrition rate of teachers is so high. We lose so many teachers at all stages of their career, but especially in the early years. This is a serious problem. Okay, we found that nationally, these are national averages, that 1/3 of the new teachers in the country are gone after 3 years, have left the classroom, and they don't return. After 5 years, we've lost 46%, almost half of the teachers that we start with 5 years ago are gone 5 years later from the classroom. These are not teachers who moved to other schools. They're not teachers who are retiring after 20 years of teaching or 25 years of teaching. These are teachers, young teachers, who are leaving early. Okay. Now, those are the national averages. We found school districts where we could find schools where the average teacher turnover was 50% in 2 years. In those schools, the most senior teacher in the school had only been there for 3 years. We have schools in this country, we're concerned about student dropout rates, but we have schools in this country where the teacher dropout rate is higher than the student dropout rate. We found one school district in South Carolina, a small school district, rural school district, where the entire teacher workforce turns over every 4 years. There were 13 schools in Las Vegas, where the average teacher tenure in those 13 schools was 1.9 years. Now, you all are in high-performing schools. You know how important it is to build a collaborative team of colleagues, continuity, community, strong teacher-student relationships. We have a crisis here. We can't build and sustain kind of teaching environments we need for the 21st century if we continue to have that kind of turnover. So we've been working, our commission is working on, what do we do to reverse this turnover? When teachers leave, what do they tell us about why they leave? They say, these are young teachers speaking now, teachers leaving pretty much in their first 3 years. They say, I don't feel prepared for the challenges I face. I don't feel like the teacher preparation program I went through didn't really prepare me for what I'm dealing with. Then they say, now that I'm here, I've been thrown sink or swim into the most challenging job of my life. I have no support. And those teachers leave in droves in the first few years. We continue to lose teachers, though, 6, 7, 8 years out. Those teachers are saying, I'm a good teacher. I'm doing a good job. But what's the future for me? Where do I go from here? How do I continue to grow professionally? How do I develop and advance in my career? Better compensation, but also more rewarding professional opportunities. And they look around and they don't see a future and they leave. These are not the people that we need to be losing from our profession. So we need to turn this picture around, and we need to turn it around quickly. And that's where all of you are so essential. You're all leading the way toward a different way of organizing teaching and learning in our schools. We took a look at this, and we took a look at the reasons the teachers gave us for leaving, and we said there's something else happening here. Take a look at this period of time in which this started to change. Back here, we had a time when the number of teachers leaving was actually less than the number entering. We had a true surplus of teachers back in the 80s and the 70s, 60s, and that allowed us to handle growth, more schools, more kids. Teachers didn't leave back then. Something is happening here. And what we think happened is there's been a dramatic change in our culture and in organization of work in our economy and society. My field is cultural anthropology. And when I watch television, I'm watching the culture. And I'm watching the culture evolve. When I watch commercials, when I watch programs, those programs are really a story about our culture. When I grew up watching television in the 50s, the storylines were all about standalone heroes. The Lone Ranger, Perry Mason, Dr. Welby, Superman. These were all stories about standalone heroes who saved the day. We don't have any of those stories anymore. Let me just show you what's happened over the last few years. Here's Dr. Kildare, another doctor from the 50s, okay, and 60s. Here was a standalone hero. This doctor solved the case, took on the case, and saved the day by himself. He was a standalone hero. We don't have that storyline anymore. We've moved from the standalone doctor, Dr. Kildare, to medical teams. The latest version is Grey's Anatomy. We've had ER. We've had all of these programs that are about a team. It's the team that saves the day now. Okay? And by the way, it's not just a team. It's a team of men and women and minority members of our society, okay, who are actively working together. And what this cultural story is about, this transition is really about, is Dr. Kildare was a good doctor. He was a great doctor. But being a good doctor is not good enough anymore. To be great, you need a team. To get from good to great, you need a team. Here's Perry Mason, standalone lawyer. Okay? He was a good lawyer. But in the 21st century, that's not good enough. To be great, you need a team, right? Pick your law show today, The Practice, LA Law, whatever you want to talk to. It's all about teamwork. Superheroes to super teams. This is the message that kids get now, all of our children. Super, super teams, okay? Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon was one of my favorites, okay? Standalone hero. Flash Gordon can actually go out of his office, get in a spaceship, and fly into space by himself, okay? Go up to the moon by himself, okay? Well, we know that it's not good enough to be Flash Gordon. You need a team to go into space. Star Trek, okay? It's all about collaborative teamwork. Our economy has changed. To be successful in the global economy, we've all heard about the flat world. The message of the flat world is that success comes through continuous learning through collaborative teamwork. That's how we succeed. Okay? Those are the transitions that have been going on over the last 50 years, and it's these kinds of opportunities that young teachers are looking around and saying, wait a minute, you know, all my friends are working in a 21st century collaborative team environment, and I'm still working in a factory or a school. I'm out of here. Because in education, what we've got, whereas we've gone from those standalone heroes of the 50s to the super teams of 2000, in education, we went from the standalone teacher of the 50s to the standalone teacher of the 21st century. Over those 50 years. Now, this is not the school I think that most of you teach in. And some people say, when they look at this picture, they say, oh, this is a trick. This is not a current picture. Okay. This is a picture of a teacher in a Seattle public school taken in 2001. And this picture was used during 2005 in several national marketing campaigns to recruit people into teaching. This is the iconic image of the teacher, still in the 21st century. We know it's the 21st century because she's got computers in the classroom in the back there. I can go back for a minute. This is the 50s teacher. She's got her technology. It's a 45 RPM record player. This is a French class. Okay. Well, she's got computers. They're not turned on. No one's using them. And she's a standalone teacher, still. Now, if you remember that storyline in the commercials in Washington, D.C., where I live, we have a very competitive healthcare environment. Hospitals are competing with each other. And you see these television ads, they're about 30 seconds long, and the little storyline goes something like, a guy has a heart attack, he gets rushed to the hospital, all these people converge on him. Doctors, technicians, nurses, technology, and they save the day together. And the tagline from the hospital is, they don't have a tagline that says, come to our hospital because we have Dr. Kildare. They have a tagline that says, come to our hospital because we have a team. Our hospital, with its capacity, can take care of you. But in our schools, we don't have that message. We have this outstanding teacher. This is Mrs. Jones. And all summer long, parents are wondering whether they're going to be able to get Mrs. Jones for their student. They're not saying, can I get my child into that school because those teachers have created a powerful learning environment in that school and I want my kid to be in that school. In too many cases, they're competing to get Mrs. Jones, who's a standalone teacher, or Mr. Smith. Now, all of you in here would qualify as either Mrs. Jones or Mr. Smith. You're the teachers that parents fight over, okay? I have three children. They're now in their mid-20s. They're all out. They have jobs. They're starting their own families. They have jobs, thank goodness. But when they were in school, I would have gone to school and fought for them to get one of you as their teacher. But what you have figured out, and the message that we have to take to the larger world, is that being Mrs. Jones, that star teacher, or Mr. Smith, that star teacher, is not good enough anymore. You need a team. All of those other folks have a team, a legal team, a medical team. NASA's team, you need a team to be successful in the 21st century. And you are leading the way in building those teams. Back to the challenges and the opportunities. What's wrong with this picture? There's three things wrong with this picture. First of all, she's teaching alone. She could be a very good teacher, but none of her colleagues are able to learn from her, benefit from what she knows, build on her knowledge and skill, and she's not able to learn from any of her colleagues. So that's the first problem with this picture. And if you look and remember back to that chart, it's a serious problem because this picture was taken in 2001. It's 2006, and she's probably gone. Okay. So not only was she teaching alone, not able to share her expertise and experience, she's not even in the school anymore. And we've lost that valuable resource. So that's the first thing that's wrong with the picture. The second thing that's wrong with the picture is that these children are fortunate. They got Mrs. Jones. But down the hall, or across town especially, there are children who don't have Mrs. Jones, who don't have teachers who are teaching at this level. So we've got a moral imperative here to change this picture. Every child deserves highly qualified teaching, and it's not going to happen one teacher at a time. It's going to be happening through your collaborative efforts. So there's a moral imperative to change this picture. There's also an economic imperative to change this picture. We're in the 21st century, and this is a factory or a school, essentially. These children, your students, they're still going to be in the workforce in 2075, 2080. With health care and projections in longevity, some of them could still be working in 2100. So you're educating a workforce that's going to work for the next 75 years. They're going to do jobs that haven't even been invented yet. They're going to use technology and skills that are still to be developed that many of them are going to invent. And working in a classroom this way isn't going to develop their ability to work in that kind of an environment. This is the most connected generation of students we've ever had outside of the classroom. They've got the technology, they've got the communication skills, but when they walk into their schools, they have to shut down and turn off and put it all away. So we have to get together and change this picture. That's why your work is so important. You are leading the way. I was fortunate yesterday to go to the Boeing project and go to the flight museum. And I was struck by something. You all are a lot like the Wright brothers. Wright brothers were innovators also, and they essentially changed the world with what they did. The Wright brothers were the first people to fly, and they took us into the age of air and space. Okay. So they were the first people to fly. Who taught them to fly? No one taught them to fly. They learned to fly by building their planes, getting on, and trying to fly them. And pilots all around the country started to follow their examples, and they learned together to fly. There was nobody to teach them to fly. And I was struck when we were in the museum about how the docent who was explaining this history of flight, he kept saying, the Wright brothers learned to develop a wing. The Wright brothers learned what they needed to do about the engine. The Wright brothers learned what they needed to do about the controls. The Wright brothers learned to fly. He kept saying they learned to fly. No one taught them to fly. No one trained them to fly. They learned to fly. They invented flight. They invented the planes, and then they invented the process for flying those planes. And that's what you're doing now. You're inventing new ways to teach. You're inventing a new learning environment through your collaborative efforts with your colleagues, with your uses of technology. you are inventing the future here. You are breaking out of the factory era and inventing the future. And your work is as crucial as what the Wright brothers did, because if you're successful in what you're doing, you will change the learning environment for these students, and you will accelerate their progress and success in the future over the next decades. Okay? So there's a lot riding on your success, on your ability to change the learning environment. It's going to change the way you work personally, of course. That's big for you personally every day. But it's going to change the future for your students, and that changes the future for our country. Essentially, we need to change this business model. We need to change this way of doing work. We need to get out of this standalone teaching model, standalone teaching in isolated classrooms. So how do we do that? We need a kind of a blueprint or a roadmap for how we get there. And I'd like to explore something like a blueprint with you, if you'll allow me to walk through it with you. This is the first part of the blueprint, is kind of figuring out what we got. If we're trying to change it, what is it? What do we have? And basically, you all got introduced to the 5-minute university yesterday. Okay, this is my 1-minute doctorate in education. This is what factory era teaching is about. Okay, this is the standalone teacher making a full frontal assault on a student. Just trying to get that knowledge into their heads, okay? And we test it. And so, essentially, the factory era standalone teaching model is about knowledge transmission, production, and delivery. The teacher's got the knowledge and is going to get it into the heads of the students, and we're going to test it. That's it. 5-minute university, you all got your doctorates. That's everything you need to know about traditional education. Teach and test. Okay? That's the model we need to change. And it's a model in which teachers are called on to engage primarily in knowledge transmission. Teachers are called on to be in the production and delivery business. So, and what I mean by that is, really, when I took Algebra 1 in high school around 1960, everything I was ever going to learn in the world about algebra came from that one teacher in that classroom with that textbook. And that teacher and that textbook were going to deliver everything that I could know about algebra. Okay. That's the model we need to break out of. Now, all of you are far out of that model. Here's another model of teaching that you're all familiar with. This is called the teacher as the coach on the side, or the guide on the side. Okay, so if the first model was called, the teacher as the sage on the stage, this is the teacher as the guide on the side. Starts to build on what we know about how people learn, how children learn. They need to explore. They need to be actively engaged. So what this teacher has done over here is structured a problem or a project, like you all do, kind of like we did here yesterday. Okay? So that P stands for a problem or a project. The teacher has kind of structured it so that it's a learning activity for these students who are now individually each trying to solve the problem, but they're also learning from their peers how their students are solving the problem, and they're seeing, you know, what works, what doesn't work. So the teacher is in a different role now. The teacher is no longer trying to drive this knowledge into their heads, but is creating an active learning environment. So that's a significant change right there in the way we organize teaching, in terms of mapping where we're trying to go. And I think that's really an important change from what we've had in the past. But I'm not satisfied with this. I think that the teacher as the guide on the side is the wrong place for the teacher. The teacher's not learning. The teacher has structured a project for the students that she or he already knows how to solve, already knows how it's going to turn out. It's not really learning. The students are learning. The teacher needs to be right in the learning activity with the students, actually engaged in authentic learning with the students. So when we do that, we change this little blueprint so that it looks like this. We move the teacher into the learning enterprise. Now I mean that the teacher is actively engaged in learning, is not pretending to solve the problem with the students, but is engaged in a real problem that she or he has not solved before and is learning with the students and applying her knowledge and his skills and solving problems. One of the early examples I encountered when I was working in technology initiatives is just down the road here in Olympia, Washington. There was a project back in called Generation Y that we worked with, where this was back in the olden days of technology, so it was around 1996. And what they were trying to do was, the internet had not swept the day yet, the web had not won yet. It was all about CD-ROM, and everything was going to be multimedia on CD-ROM, okay? And what they were trying to do in that school, middle school this was train all their teachers to create multimedia projects and activities on CDs. And they were having a heck of a time. The teachers were struggling with it, they didn't get it, they didn't want to do it. They just were not learning it. And one of the trainers looked around and discovered, you know what? The students already know how to do this. They know how to work with multimedia. So we got a solution to the problem here. Why don't we put the students and teachers together in teams? And what they did was they made these after-school projects so that it wouldn't affect the students' grade, it wouldn't affect the teachers' performance ratings. But they just said, why don't we just put the teacher with the students, and a history teacher can make a history project, the math teacher can make a math project. And what they found out was they had an interesting combination. The teacher knew the history but didn't know multimedia technology. The student knew the technology but didn't know the history. But when the two of them got together, they could create a multimedia history project, because the students were teaching the teachers to use the multimedia and the teachers were teaching the students the history. So they were all learning. The kids were learning the history, the teachers were learning the technology, and they were learning it much faster than they were through the training program. And it became so popular that in addition to after school, they started to come in on Saturdays, and then they started to say, well, why can't we just do this in our regular class time? And then pretty soon, why can't everybody in the school do this? So that became the model of kind of collaborative learning of teachers and students together learning. It greatly accelerated both the content knowledge of the students and the knowledge of the teachers, because once the teachers could do this, they started reaching out to bring in more history resources, and they were learning more history also. So now in terms of our blueprint, we have another interesting transition. We have teachers and students who are working together. The students are teaching the teachers are teaching the students. Who's teaching whose student? It's not useful anymore to talk about teachers and students. At that point, I think we need to stop talking about teachers and students. They're all learners. Okay. That's what's important about what they're doing. I've said to people, what if we had schools in which there were no students and no teachers? And people say, well, that would just be an empty building. I say, no, it's not. It would be a building full of learners. Some of them are expert learners, because after all, what a teacher is an expert learner. Teachers are professionals, you're experts at learning. You understand learning theory, you know how people learn, you know how to assess learning, you know how to formulate hypotheses and test ideas and gather research. Teachers are expert learners, and students are novice learners or beginner learners. But what's really important about especially the kind of work that all of you are doing now in your projects is that you are all learners. You need to focus on learning. So we change this blueprint again. It's no longer relevant that someone's a teacher or a student. What matters is that they're learners. We still recognize that one of them, the large L, is an expert learner. But now we start to focus not on how do we help somebody teach, but how we help everybody to learn and everybody to go to the next level from wherever they are in their learning. So we have a new kind of environment here. It's a learning environment as opposed to a teaching environment. We have something else we'd want to change, though. They're learning, but they're still within the boundaries. This red line indicates a classroom or a school. They're still working within a bounded environment. Well, with technology now, those walls don't need to mean anything anymore. We can connect to more learners. You can be connecting with your colleagues. If you use this innovative teachers network, you can be doing projects online. You can be linking up with each other. You don't have to be limited to the learners who just are in your classroom, your building, or even your district. So we can just wipe out these walls, these red lines which represent the walls. If we wipe that out, we get this. Now we make it possible for all kinds of learners to converge on the problem, all kinds of learners to share their knowledge, skill, and experience with each other. Some of these large L's could be in university. They could be at a museum, like the one we went to yesterday. They could be in business. They could be around the world. But they all have a contribution to make. And they're all learning from each other and building each other's capacity and expertise. This is what I call a distributed learning team. So what's different from this is we have a different model. You remember that standalone teacher with the arrow going at the student? That teacher's job was to produce knowledge, deliver it to the student. These teachers, who I now call learners, these large L's, their job is not so much to produce the knowledge, but to distribute the learning opportunities so that they're matching students up with the appropriate learning opportunities and resources. Some of them are in the classroom, some of them come from that teacher, some come from a teacher down the hall or across the town in another district, some are around the world. So the teacher's role is changing, and you are leaders in that process. You're moving from having maybe been a standalone teacher once, delivering, to now distributing and packaging and repackaging learning opportunities. Connecting your students, connecting yourself, connecting your colleagues up to many other learning resources. So your job is changing. It's not to transmit knowledge anymore. It's to create this distributed learning environment. And when you do that, you personally become involved in continuous professional growth. You are constantly learning with your students. So that's the environment we're trying to build. That's, you know, in terms of the blueprint, that's where we're going. This model, in this model is our lives, really, outside of schools. Many of us are connected this way. I have a distributed family, okay? And over the years, we've stayed connected this way. I have, I live in Washington, D.C. I grew up in Buffalo, okay? So I live in Washington, D.C. I had one son who was in Army in Bosnia, who was a combat engineer in Bosnia. He sent all the other members of the family information about what he was doing on the internet, pictures, all kinds of stuff. Another son moved from Washington to Houston, went to Culinary Arts Institute, became a chef. Sent us all kinds of information about what he was doing and learning and sharing. So we were thousands of miles apart, but we could stay connected and we continue to learn and grow as a family. My daughter works for Ann Taylor, is a store manager, has moved around the country. She stays connected. My sister is in Buffalo. She has two sons, cousins of my children. They work in a research laboratory in Rochester, New York. They're connected. Okay. Everybody stays in touch and shares information about what's going on. We had my mother was 82 years old a few years ago, and when we were getting ready for her birthday, we said to her, well, what would you like for your birthday? She said she wanted a computer. so that she could get into this network, because she was left out. And that was a problem because she's one of the big L's, okay? And she was not in this, okay? And she was feeling left out. So fine, her birthday was in middle of August, and we all got together, back to school specials on computers. We got together, we got her a computer, and we got her on the internet. It turned out that she had been going down to the local public library where they had a program for seniors, where they teach seniors how to use computers and get on the internet and so on. So she had the basic knowledge for how to do this. So now she was part of this, but she wasn't active. And shortly after that, my wife and I went on a vacation to Italy, Caventura in Italy. So we continued to do the same thing. Wherever we would go, we would get online and say, okay, we're in Venice. Here are some links, here are museums, this is the Grand Canal, this is what it looks like. We can talk about it with members of the family. I would send this off and they could open the pictures and we could have a little chat about it. So I knew my mother was receiving this, but she wasn't sending anything back. She wasn't participating, never got an email message from her. I was thinking, oh, this isn't gonna work. And Dora, my wife, was saying, just be patient, she'll respond. So I just kept sending the stuff. After about a week of this, sending it every day, I said, well, we're going to a place called Tremezzo, which is up in northern Italy near Switzerland. This was in September. I said, when I get there, I'll send you a message and I'll send you some more links. So we get to Tremezzo and I open my email and there's a message from my mother. My mother's first email message had arrived. And when I opened it, I found out that she had based her message on her own research on the internet. And her first message said, a cold front is moving into Italy. Be sure to wear your sweater today. It's true. Okay, so we're gonna change the world here. We're going to change the way we organize work, but certain core values and certain core relationships are still going to be there. We're not going into space here. We're still teaching kids basic things, but we're doing it in a new environment. Okay? A very powerful new environment. And you are the leaders. Okay? When we were at the Flight Museum yesterday, they kept talking about how the early pilots and the pioneers of space, like you are, pioneers of 21st century learning, those pioneers of flight kept trying to sell people planes. They kept trying to have people get this, you know? And they would say, planes, how is that going to work? It's just not going to work. So they had to keep going out and demonstrating it and showing people that it can work. And it turned out that they were pretty useful in World War I. And then it turned out that they were pretty useful for delivering mail. So that's good. We should use them for that. And then it turned out that they were really valuable in World War II. And then Boeing kept saying, we've got to change our business model. We've got to change the business model. We can't always be about military flight. We've got to get into business flight. Business travel, and the first passenger flight was really for business people, and then it became, you know, everybody traveling. So he was thinking, change the business model, demonstrate to people that this will work. So that's what you're doing with your projects. You're demonstrating that there's a different way, and not only is it different, but it works, and it's more powerful than the factory era way. That's why you need to keep at it, and that's why we all want to work with you. Working through these Innovative Teachers Network, our commission is going around the country also advocating with state policy leaders that we need to change this teaching environment. We're advocating two things that you are central to. The first one is this, end standalone teaching. That goes to the way that we organize work, the way that we build school buildings and classrooms, the way that we equip them with technology. But basically, we have to, as quickly as possible, end the standalone teaching model. It's only by ending the standalone teaching model that you can work with the network of resources and colleagues that you need to create powerful learning environments. You all know what those people in the space program, in the legal profession, in medicine know, which is that you can be good, but as good as you are, you can't be great until you can collaborate and use the spirit and power of teamwork to bring those resources to bear. So we want to end standalone teaching. The other thing we want to recognize that's happening is that you are in the process of transforming your schools into learning hubs and network communities. Okay. When I went to school, when our parents went to school, the school was the place where you went to learn. If you want to learn something, you go to school. Now our students and you have a tremendously rich learning environment available on the network, on the web. There are many ways and many places to learn. And your schools and your classrooms now are a place to learn in that network. They're not the only place to learn, they're one place to learn within a network. And we now have to start to think about the fact that that's what a school is. So that a school becomes really a community hub, a learning hub for everybody in the community really, but especially for you and your students, to link to many other resources. No longer bounded by the walls of your classroom and building. So we would like to change those two things. Standalone teaching and teaching that's bounded by the walls of traditional classrooms and schools. So there's about 75 of you here, and we're asking you to change the world. There's more of you out there. There's more of your colleagues. You all know other people who are working on this. We need to create a movement. We need to recognize that when you go home, you're not alone. You're not going home to work alone, but you are now part of a network of leaders who are working to change this world. And if you think that you're not able to, or there aren't enough of you, I always turn to Margaret Mead at this point. My favorite quote from Margaret Mead is this one, which was, "Never doubt the power of a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens to change the world. It's the only thing that ever has." So if you go back, continue to work, join with us, join with your colleagues, you will change the world. Thank you.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.